Are you needing a safe space to learn how you can get your mind right, Lewis?
Yes, right now. You have never spoken to me more. Yes.
Well, tune into Imani State of Mind, a weekly podcast hosted by psychiatrist and TV personality Dr. Imani Walker and co-host comedian Meg Scoop Thomas, two smart and successful women and mothers sharing their personal and professional experiences to help normalize conversations about mental health. And let me tell you something. I love people with Scoop in their name.
Oh, sure.
Meg and Fat Man, the only two I know, but...
I'm going to say I'm thinking of Lose Control with Missy Elliott. That's right.
Yeah. And if you've lost control, then you should probably get your state of mind together. So this is not your average mental health show. Each week, they break down what's happening in news, pop culture, and their very own experiences managing mental health. Together, you will laugh, keep it real, and create a safe space where everyone can help get their issues together. Nothing is off the table. Dr. Imani Walker and Meg Scoop Thomas discuss everything from relationships with yourself, your spouse, and your parents to the realities of postpartum depression and anxiety. Do not forget to take a deep breath, find your calm, and get into Imani's state of mind with new episodes dropping every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.
Every time I see the word Imani, that Legend of a Cowgirl song gets in my head because it's by Imani Coppola. I'm going to bring it up every time.
And we are back for an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Lewis Pertell, arguably the woman king of Keep It.
Wow.
You're the man. You're the man queen of Keep It.
Gina Prince Blythewood, your next assignment.
We are excited to have a guest host with us this week. It is Sam Sanders, fresh off of hosting NPR's It's Been a Minute, and now you have 12 podcasts.
Listen, 12 podcasts. I got to put my dogs through dog college, okay? It's not cheap. I'm so happy to be here with you both. I'm excited about it.
I know. I'm also just thinking about dogs with liberal arts degrees now. I think it sounds very cute. There should be a whole like William Wegman type photo shoot thing with dogs getting degrees.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, Hooch famously did not have a degree. Listen. You don't need one to be a police dog, apparently.
That's right. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Yeah. How many?
Yeah, you turned down the full scholarship to Juilliard. That's right. You turned it down. Yeah.
How many unarmed people?
I have two jobs now.
You have two. Yes. Okay. Vibe check. And also, you have a podcast at Vulture as well.
Called Intuit. Yeah. So yeah. Intuit is a show with Vulture and New York Magazine. It is a weekly digest of pop culture and a showcase of the best and brightest of Vulture. All kinds of stuff. Deep dives into the culture, fun games, some celebrities, etc. And then my other show is just a gab fest with two good friends of mine. Poet Saeed Jones and producer and Tony winner Zach Stafford. We literally had an idea during pandemic to like turn our group chat into a podcast, and someone bought it. So we get together and talk about stuff we want to talk about every Wednesday. So Wednesdays and Thursdays, you can find
me. I just want to say, by the way, that most people, I feel like half the universe has the idea to turn their group chat into a podcast, and I need to discourage that right now. I don't want to see that or hear it, generally speaking. Sam Sanders, I'm going to allow it from you and Saeed, who is a Keep It veteran.
But Zach is too.
Oh, that's right. Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, we invented your podcast. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you all so much. Y'all's cut is in the mail. Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's technically a spinoff. Actually, you know what? You are the last of them to, you are the last of your co-hosts to be on this show. And yet we have been on your show before. I think we've been
y'all
on
like, came on my
minute,
last
like,
show.
I've been
yeah.
like two or three times before.
Like, I feel like you might have been. And then I've been with y'all's colleagues over at Pod Save a few times, and I've hung with Mr. Lovett a few times. So I'm just happy that I've finally made it here. The promised land.
I did not know you were a liberal hack. It's good to know.
Okay. I am. Oh, yes.
You know what's funny about a group chat as a podcast is that my favorite thing about a group text is that, so you start with a group threat that's maybe like 8 to 10 people. They're either your close friends or your acquaintances, people that you hang out with socially, or a lot of group chats are formed from a vacation. Yes. I love those.
Those are hard.
You travel with people. They are hard, but it's like, if they're your friends, then that's good. But like, if there's like a couple other random people in there, it's always funny thinking about like, the six of us keep talking after the vacation's over, and there's like two or three people on the thread who are like, I wish they would shut the fuck up.
Well, and then there's always that like one inside joke from the vacation that was only funny on the vacation. Yet yes. that one person wants to keep bringing it up every like 3 days. And you're like, we've moved on. We have moved on.
And also, we still have a bond without that joke. You don't need to bring up the joke.
Yeah. You
know? But
yeah.
the flip side of that is that it is useful to still bully the friend who, you know, like booked a bad Airbnb.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I'm shouting out my friend Chris Aragon, who will never live down the fact that he booked a horrible Airbnb for us in Barcelona.
How horrible was it?
No air conditioning.
Yeah, no. And you can check for that. You can check for
and
that.
Bedroom lies.
That sounds like an erotic thriller. Bedroom lies.
One of the beds was a cot in a bathroom.
Ooh. Oh my god,
that's not legal.
Yeah,
you can do that.
Yeah. I don't know what they could do in Barcelona. Okay. It's it's a whole other world over there.
I just want to say that Sam is in a chic looking Airbnb.
I'm currently
in San Antonio,
yeah.
Which calls to mind the question: who is the definitive San Antonio celebrity? It's a gigantic city, and I can't think of anybody who's from there. Jared Padalecki.
Yes. Okay.
Who is that?
Well,
who is that?
Can we not disrespect Supernatural on this thread?
It's on its 444th season on the Reels channel.
I'm going to tell you the biggest stars of San Antonio. So I went to college here. I went to the University of the Incarnate Word. And Eva Longoria's character's husband on Desperate Housewives is also an Incarnate Word alum.
Carlos.
Yes. Also, okay. Selena is not from San Antonio, but San Antonio claims Selena.
Okay.
Also,
Selena had arguably heard of San Antonio.
Yeah. Megan Thee Stallion was born in San Antonio.
I didn't know that, but she reps Houston.
She reps Houston, yeah. You know.
Also, so when I was a kid, the Spurs were like the best team in the NBA, and some of those players are still classic icons, like David Robinson, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker. Those dudes, we still rep them hard.
Well, Eva Longoria's ex-husband.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The Eva and Tony era was quaint, you know?
They were like the king and queen of San Antonio. You couldn't tell us nothing. We had our Jay-Z and Beyonce down here. And then they broke up.
I'm going to warn you that in the future, if you bring up Spurs, you better be talking about something that Reba is wearing. Okay? I don't want any of that on my podcast.
Listen, that's the extension of my basketball knowledge. That is the extension of my basketball
knowledge. Nice save. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Lewis wants to talk about Shane for an hour. Okay? That's what we're going to get into.
Alan Ladd. Yes. Brandon DeWild, one of the great child actors. See? You've set me off.
I love it.
Anyway, I'm so excited to have you here this week,
Sam. It's good to be here. I love y'all's show. Y'all have been a companion to me for a long time, and there are many road trips where like I can remember things y'all said at a certain point when I was like on the 10 driving home. Like, so this is nice for me. This is really good.
Oh, how nice.
I appreciate
of you. Thank
y'all.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild that we've been doing this for 5 years. It's mm-hmm. I want to ask you that too. How long did you do NPR?
I was at NPR. I would say in my exit interviews and press stuff that it was 12 years. It was actually 13 years. I just don't say 13 a lot. It's an unlucky number. But I went right to graduate school after undergrad and then right to NPR after that. So I started interning for the local station in Boston in 2009. And I was basically public radio ever since then.
Okay. How long was It's Been a Minute?
It's Been a Minute was I hosted it almost 5 years. And before that, I had hosted the NPR Politics podcast for about a year and a half.
Jesus Christ, like Lucille Ball, all these fucking syndicated series all over
working.
The place.
She's working.
Your next one is Here's Sam Sanders.
Yes.
You know, we're approached 5 years in January, but this is just going on like a Chuck Lorre show.
Oh, yeah.
This is,
no, I love
this
it.
We have nothing better to do.
Still getting Kimmy nominations for Allison Janney. Yeah.
All right, we're going to get our show started. We are going to talk about some of the films that we've seen lately, what's exciting us, and we want to get Sam's thoughts on the culture at large. We're going to focus on The Woman King, which came out this weekend, and have a lot of thoughts.
Me too.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about Nicki Minaj. Unfortunately, this is
I tried to read up on that before we started today, and I was like, "There's too much to read up on. Y'all gotta fill me in."
There is far too much, and I feel like we've addressed it, and now it's time. It's time to actually address her, the Barbs, and my life as a Barb.
And I don't want to get doxxed. I don't want to get doxxed after this taping, sir.
Nicki Minaj's marriage to the internet, fraught. It's fraught.
To say the least.
And also, I have a solo interview, which should be unbearably intimate for everybody at home, with the awesome Andrea Riseborough, who I came to know as Wallace Simpson in Madonna's WE all those years ago, but she is... a fabulous actress who's now in a new movie called To Leslie, which is an astounding performance. In the interview, I compare her to a few actresses that I never would have compared Andrea Riseborough to before. She's an utter chameleon. So psyched she's with us today.
Is that a Judd Apatow biopic?
To Leslie? No. Yes. And not like to Maude. Yeah. Right. Just to Leslie.
Just to Leslie.
All right, we have a lot more Keep It coming up. We will be right back.
Hey guys, September 21st, that's today, is National Voter Registration Day. The first vote-by-mail ballots are hitting mailboxes, and the earliest in-person voting starts this week. If you don't know how you're voting, this is the week to get your shit together.
Visit votesaveamerica.com/everylastvote to make your plan to vote. Remind everyone you know to do the same and donate to the Every Last Vote Fund to directly support the work of organizers and volunteers in key swing states that are actively working to battle disenfranchisement in communities of color. We keep saying this every week, but you know, the cinema is back. And this week
it
saw a glut of new releases. And there's a bunch of things coming out soon, too, that I feel like we're either excited for or not excited for. So let's get into those. First, The Woman King, I think, is fantastic.
Okay.
I enjoyed it as a film, as a cinematic experience. Did I love everything about it? No, but it felt like I was watching. It felt like it accomplished what producer Maria Bello
and screenwriter Maria Bello. What in the randomizer of lady celebs who could have written this movie? So, co-star of duets, Maria Bello,
walking around with her fedora on Prime Suspect, Maria Bello.
That's the same. Yes.
She talked about wanting to create a Braveheart starring women. And you know what? I think this film is just about as good as Braveheart. Maybe better, because it doesn't have Mel Gibson in it.
That's true. Nope. I would have loved a Sophie Marceau cameo. But you know what? In Dahomey, I don't feel like, you know, Sophie would be walking around. So I sort of understand. Sam,
is it like a place called Dahomey?
Yes. Oh, a real kingdom. That's from funny. Like the early 19th century. It's in modern day Benin in Africa.
Okay.
But Gina Prince Blythewood is the director who did Love and Basketball and Beyond the Lights. And I have to say, like, you would not guess she directed those movies. This is an intense and serious epic with Viola Davis giving. Her character has qualities that you've seen in Viola Davis before. Like there's the stalwart, the, you know, seemingly immovable, the. All powerful with like hard and tough wisdom behind the eyes, but it's also not like a Viola Davis I've seen
How
before.
So?
And that I don't know. She's so militaristic in a way that I don't know. In a way, I think Viola Davis characters are supposed to be like generally relatable to us. Like our inner strength is her inner strength. And this is not that. She's like
really
far advanced, I would say. And also what this movie to me is really about is the continuing rise of Lashana Lynch, who we loved yes. in the James Bond films, but are in, huh. in the last James Bond film in No Time to Die. Correct. And mm-hmm. she is, first of all, she gets a lot of opportunity in this movie, as somebody who's kind of training this young soldier girl to be fierce, one, but two, so funny. The amount of like comic side eye she gets to deal in and the amount of playful condescension she gets to do, stellar. I'm really looking forward to her and more stuff.
Huh. Yeah. Lashana Lynch is sort of like fantastic for me in this film. And what's actually interesting about the film, Sam, is that it's caused a bit of Twitter brouhaha at first.
Wait, why?
What does it? But the story is about two warring African nations. And it addresses the fact that, you know, like African nations used to sell the captives of other nations to slavers, European yeah. slavers, you know? And it's it addresses a part of history that I feel like we don't really talk about. And the fact that, you know, like, obviously, you know, white people didn't just come to Africa and like scoop up everybody on their own, you know? It's there was a lot of sort of fraught history in this, and the idea that, you know, like, yeah, if you are fighting people with, you know, muskets and guns and, you know, they have gold and they, you know, come in and they convince you that, you know, turning against one another is for your benefit. It happens. That happens globally. That has happened everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Did people, were they mad that it was even in there at all? Or were they mad yes. because the way they did it wasn't historically accurate?
Mad that it was in there at all. They were mad before the movie came out. I mean, the same way that people were mad in Harriet, you know, with the idea that someone would turn in the slaves who were trying to escape. It wow. was black. I mean, it's happened, okay?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I haven't seen this movie yet. I've heard good things. I love that director. I think Beyond the Lights is pretty incredible. I think Love and Basketball is a
it's
classic.
One of my favorite fucking movies. Beyond it's the Lights. So like, good. We don't talk about how good that movie is. And unfortunately, it like came out right before like the Nate Parker scandal happened, but he and Gugu are so good in that film.
Yeah. What I keep wondering in the launch of this movie, and the launch has gone well, I want to say it made some $19 million this first weekend mm-hmm. at the box office. Really good for this time of year. I was worried about The Woman King because I'm like, oh, if you're just waiting for Black Panther, the sequel, do you want to watch this movie? But it seems like that didn't hurt them. They made some good money. Apparently, it was well received at TIFF. Viola Davis doing Viola Davis. There's even already, I don't know, and check me on this, there's some Oscar buzz for her for this, maybe, possibly. I don't know what the
I mean, people are
like
calling it
year.
A career best for Viola Davis. And it would be
But
nice
everything she does is
the
career best, right?
That's, no, her job is to deliver career best. That's what yeah. she is. But yeah. That said, I mean, of course, never counter out. I think this is one of the most exciting Best Actress races in years because we have her. We have Michelle Yeoh, who is still looming large in the conversation.
Yes.
We have Cate Blanchett in the upcoming movie Tar, which I feel like is going to sincerely light me on fire. Like I'm going to walk out of the theater with embers shooting off me. Olivia Colman is back. And as we know, remember that one year she menaced Glenn Close and it worked out? It was nasty, but I respected it.
Did she do it 2 years in a row?
She has three nominations already. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't all 1 year after the other, but yeah, three nominations.
Here's my question for you both, and here's what I keep waiting for Viola Davis to do. Mm-hmm. I want to see if she can do comedy. Is there any comedy from her in this movie?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
In the same way that Lashana Lynch gets to be like so tough and wise that like dealing with other people is an eye roll to her.
Yeah.
Viola Davis gets some of that and really just the most withering looks. Actually, I would describe it as Maggie Smith comedy, what
okay.
Viola Davis
okay.
does
yeah.
in this
I want
movie.
That.
Well,
I
she's
also
funny
just
in Suicide Squad too, but
okay.
I would say she has not been afforded comedy in the way that she hasn't been afforded romantic comedy. I guess. And maybe that's what you're missing. Because I remember.
I think so.
There's always those, you know, she always is like giving a great speech somewhere. And she's always referring to the fact that people refer to her, you know, it's like Black Meryl Streep, but I don't get these Black Meryl Streep roles. And you, when you think about Meryl at the height of her career, when she was doing like an Out of Africa, but then was also doing, you know, like A Death Becomes Her, but then also doing like a Heartburn. I'm like, I think Heartburn is boring, but I would love to see I would love to see a Viola Davis Heartburn.
What I want to see is a Viola Davis Black Mamma Mia, and the music is not ABBA. The music is who's a classic, a Black classic music group? Frankie Beverly and Mays. All the hits.
Please. Oh my God.
That's what I want. I also got to say, when I think about Viola Davis in this movie, which I'm going to see before this week is done, I'm just glad to have her back in a movie. She had gotten into this, not rut, I'm sure it was very lucrative for her. She was on a really big, long speaking circuit, giving her little motivational speeches and sermons everywhere. I tried to watch the one she did with Oprah where they just sat down and talked about therapy speak for an hour. She's good at that, but I'm like, I want to see you act. So I'm glad she's back on a screen acting. I like that.
The thing about Viola Davis is she always gives you the performance that you expect from her, but then her speaking thing is always in tandem. Like, she brings the game that goes with it. I want to see the meeting that goes into Viola Davis campaigning, because I've just never seen somebody on an award circuit who seems to have banked so much information. Like, she'll always reference, like, I don't know, like crazy things that you wouldn't know off the top of your head. And it almost seems like she can predict questions and stuff. She's a really smart campaigner. And also just, I mean, rad person, obviously, additionally. Yeah. But
it feels like she's constantly preparing a sermon. And they're good sermons. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, it is a thing.
One thing I also want to say about the film, too, is that, you know, she's sort of, you know, we got to the typical thing that happens when a Black big budget, you know, sort of mainstream film is coming out, where people are like, you know, if you want to see more of these, you know, you need to like actually go and support it. And, you know, we feel that as like Black people, Sam, we feel that as like queer people, Lewis, you know, all three of us too. But like, I like that this movie is actually good too, because a lot of times people say like, you got to bring your dollars to support Black cinema, and then I'll go see the
movie.
And I'm like, it's bad. And then it's bad.
But also, that's a lie.
This is thankfully because, good.
Like, yes. These studios have more money than they know what to do with. And they'll spend
they
a billion dollars. They'll spend $1 billion to reboot Lord of the Rings. So they have the money. And if they want to support it, it doesn't matter what the last movie did or not. Because, you know, no one's saying, if we don't support Cha-Cha Real Smooth, we're not going to make another white boy indie comedy. Like, they're not saying that. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what's wild to me. Like, they can make whatever movie they want to.
I know. I actually wish it had a bigger budget, to be honest. I feel like my two knocks against it were, I feel like they needed more sets. But also, you know, there were some COVID problems too. So, like, I could get it. But I wanted it to feel more expansive than just inside the palace. I wanted it to feel as more epic as Braveheart. I also don't really like movies like that. But I did love this movie and enjoy watching it. So I'm like, maybe I just don't like movies like that about white men. And two, Maria Bello, story credit, and then I believe Dana Stevens is the screenwriter who's done, you know, she did, she created What About Brian. She wrote City of Angels, Life or something like it. Definitely had a white woman vibe to it a bit, because it did not need
the woman came.
It didn't need the mulatto love story that's in it.
Not mulatto. Not mulatto.
Truly, one of the plot points is there's a slaver who comes, and one of his friends comes along with him, and he's mixed because his mother was sold from the Dahomey tribe. And had always talked about that was the place where she was most free. So he visits so that he could see where his mother came from. And he plays into the story in a romantic way. And I was like, yeah, a white woman wrote this.
Wow. Wait, can I just also say, not to be racist, but every time y'all say Dahomey, I want to respond, no, you Dahomey. That's rude. I'm sorry.
I think you can say that. I think that's fair. Okay. And also, I think I am that. So yes. It would really be reassuring to me. I just want to say, tangent, you just brought up the movie City of Angels. What a crazy moment in time where at least everybody I knew saw that movie and everybody I knew owned the soundtrack for a couple of reasons.
Because the Goo Goo Dolls, right?
Goo Goo Dolls were on it, Iris. And then also, we were desperately waiting for Alanis Morissette's second album and it wasn't coming out. So she put out the single Uninvited on there. And it became
that
this huge sensation.
Jams. Yeah. That song jams. Alanis did that song. Yeah.
Drama.
I mean, Sarah McLachlan's Angel is in that film, too.
Yes.
I mean,
right. Also, every
Bono. There's a U2.
Yeah. There were two or three videos from that soundtrack that were on VH1 for like 2 years straight. You could not see Iris on VH1 every day.
Oh, yeah. No, City. I mean, VH1 basically changed its name to the City of Angels number. Yes.
So that's also what I mean when you talk about like wanting Viola Davis in something comedic. Not even comedic. I want. She always
you
has
want
to
Black
play
Mama Mia. I'm telling you. Well, you want Black Mama Mia.
She always has to play the hardened thing. I like Black Mama Mia, but like she always has to play sort of like something hardened. And I'm like, I miss like a City of Angels, you know? And I don't think we really got a lot of like some of those or like films like that for so many of our Black female leads. And I feel like, you know, give them some tenderness, some Al Green.
I also wonder, though, is it what she wants? At this point in her career, she probably can tell folks what she wants to do and probably can get some folks to write her a project.
But no, she does not want to do that. She always says in her sermons that she can't, though.
I feel like at a certain point, that is less true than you say.
Mm-hmm. I just think self-fulfilling.
You know, like not to cast aspersion, but like if Viola Davis went to her team and said, I need a rom-com, they could get her a rom-com at this point? Am I wrong to think that?
Yeah. Well, we also don't really make adult rom-coms anymore. You know, I'm looking forward to the
George Clooney, Julia Roberts. I've watched the trailer 5 times. It looks so great.
The trailer tells you everything, but I don't care. I saw there was a Vanity Fair interview that was going around with them, like a video one. And it's just like, remember chemistry?
Remember movie stars?
Also,
we used to have movie stars.
I just want to say I cannot get over in general how, as a teenager, how wrong I was about Julia Roberts. I took her for granted, and I thought she would just always be in every movie forever. And I don't know. I guess I thought her appeal was bland. Excuse me. Julia Roberts is, first of all, hilarious.
Yes.
Second of all, obviously, just an amazing presence, period. But watching this interview with George Clooney, you're just reminded, like, there's something sizzling about her and also a bit of a don't fuck with me vibe too, which I love hanging under everything she says. Like, oh, I can be charming for now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a little bit of a threat in there. I like it.
Well, I feel like movie stars like her and like George Clooney and just like the big ones of yesteryear and a few from today, like Kiki Palmer, they have this quality where they know they're hot. They know they're cool. They know they're fun and they aren't afraid of it. They're not afraid of it. And that confidence just pulls you in even more. And I feel like a lot of these new celebrities that come up on social or Instagram or TikTok, they're performing timidity in a way that I find repulsive.
And relatable.
Be a star.
Relatability. Yeah.
Like Julia Roberts is not like you. She's cooler than you. She's hotter than you. But she's nice and you love it. Right? And I just, I want more of that energy. Like she's an alpha movie stars. I love that.
Well, so I feel like that's why I liked the Don't Worry, Darling press tour stuff with Florence Pugh, because I felt like...
Not to make it about Don't Worry, Darling, that pivot.
She felt like a star.
Yes.
You know? It felt like we hadn't had a moment where it's like you had silly Hollywood gossip about a film and like an actor and a director like feuding with each other or like on set drama, and it felt like everything about her arrival at Venice, like, and everything swirling around it, it felt like a star again, you know? It wasn't trying to be like, oh, I'm relatable, I want to do this. It was like, no, you were like, let her do what she want to do, you know? She has it. I feel like Zendaya has it.
Timothy
Kiki
Chalamet
Palmer
has it.
Yes, quite.
I think Timothy Chalamet does have it. He might annoy you. But
he annoys
Timothy,
me.
But Timothy Chalamet has that
unacceptable.
Like,
you can't be in a movie
star quality.
You can't be in the movie stars and dislike Timothy Chalamet.
You know what it is?
In a way that no other male actor is.
It's because I saw those videos of him from high school when he would walk around rapping in high school. And I didn't like that.
Which I did forget about. Which I did forget
about. I didn't like that.
Also, why did I forget about it? Because my brain couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Chemically, also, I expelled it.
I figured it out. The Black Mamma Mia starring Viola Davis will have a soundtrack of only Stevie Wonder classics.
It could be that or Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah.
Okay. That's Stevie Wonder might be better. Might be a bigger range there, and you get some ballads like you would with ABBA too. You know,
yeah.
You can turn For Once in My Life into a big climactic.
Oh yeah.
If it's Earth, Wind & Fire, though, the movie is called like September, and it's about a wedding that was on the 21st of September, and this couple is divorced now, and they're remembering the 21st of September. And you know what? It was probably also like a double wedding between two friends, two couples,
yes.
And none of them speak anymore. And now they are, for some reason, brought back together because their kids are getting married on the 21st of September.
Can we write this? And where is this film set? Don't say Atlanta. Let's be more adventurous.
Let's not be more adventurous. Not Atlanta. Mm. This is set like
Martha's Vineyard. Martha's Vineyard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cute.
Yeah. But I think you want the foreign thing too. You know, you want like
Serpentine Fire. Where are we going to play that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where will we set this movie? Let's put it in. Let's Jamaica. Think, but let's circle back. This is the project.
Jamaica, the Bahamas.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a winning movie. Okay. Write this. Well, seems write this.
Easy. Thank you. You know, before we wrap this up, has anyone seen literally any other movie that they've cared about recently?
Well, I want to say that coming out in a second is Bros, the Billy Eichner rom-com. It'll be in theaters. Mm-hmm. Luke McFarlane. Also, like, tons of queer actors are in this. And I just want to say, in the run-up to this movie coming out, and there's been a lot of fanfare about the fact that it's the first gay rom-com in a theater and stuff, I just feel like, and full disclosure, I wrote for Billy on the Street. Billy's a friend of ours. We see him all the time, whatever. I personally just want to say, I feel like not enough has been said about how original a voice Billy Eichner has been, just period. He basically has invented an entire lane of comedy and like introduced it to people. And not only was it fucking hilarious, but he really used a bunch of qualities about being a gay guy I have not seen in a lot of other comedy, period. And that it's exposed to so many people and they love it. For example, the like finding the average pop culture opinion monotonous, like going up to somebody on the street and be like, shut the fuck up, you think that? Like, that's something resting in a lot of gay people's heads. Like, I have to put up with your mediocrity, even though I, as a gay man, have assigned myself to be a pop culture custodian and historian, and somehow your opinion means more than mine because I'm some weirdo. I just have appreciated his voice even before I worked for him. The angst he brings, the volume of the comedy. It's just like it was all completely new in so many different ways, and I'm glad we're going to get to see that in Bros, which
I'm excited about it.
Which I'm is so a hilarious film. So
I'm going to see it because I'm going to be interviewing Guy Branum about it. He worked on it. And I
keep
love
it
him.
Legend.
Yes. And his last book, so good. I'm just like, I'm excited to just see the movie. You know, there's so much chatter and dialogue around the conversations around the thing. It's time for the thing. And I can't wait to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this year has been a big year for conversations around movies again. You know, there was
discourse about discourses.
Right. Yeah, the discord about Bros versus Fire Island, and it was just so funny because it's like obviously like so many people from Fire Island are in Bros, or like they're all friends with each other, and you know it's that, and then you know there's discourse. I mean, this fucking movie Blonde comes out this weekend, and I'm like, I'm already tired of hearing about
The Ana de Armas one.
Yes. I'm already tired of it.
You know, she said
it.
That Marilyn Monroe haunted the set.
I know. And I'm like, listen, bitch. I'm like, if the ghost is haunting you, if you are filming the movie where she died and you are getting haunted, get the fuck out.
Molly, you in danger,
say,
girl.
Is that a good
Molly,
thing?
You in danger, girl.
That is literally like a House on Haunted Hill. Okay? Like, it's like there's a horror movie about the making of Blonde where you're shooting a movie where Marilyn Monroe died, and she's like, I've had it with y'all.
Can you believe we're only 6 or 7 more movies away from understanding where Marilyn Monroe is coming from? Wow. I love mythologizing this basic problem she had. Anyway.
Who plays next? You know who's next, though? Like, I cannot believe that we already have a new Elvis movie coming out.
Wait, we do?
Right. The Priscilla movie?
Sofia Coppola is making Priscilla, and I'm like, we are already getting to the point now. I'm like, is Elvis next or Priscilla or something? Like, is Elvis the next celebrity that we're like, here's a bunch of movies about him?
It should take place entirely behind the scenes on the movie The Naked Gun, like well after Elvis has died.
Okay. That and, you know, speaking of like, that's another reason to take it back to The Woman King, where I liked hearing a new sort of like original story, original in the sense that, we haven't seen this story so much before. It's new information to us. I'm like, there's the Ryan Murphy, Jeffrey Dahmer thing coming out. And I'm like, aren't we tired of that bitch?
I don't need that. I don't need that. What I need is September, the Black Mamma Mia starring Viola Davis. Who's her love interest? To close the loop, who's her love interest?
Well, who can sing?
Yeah, is Stokes Mitchell around? What's he up to?
Yeah, Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Jamie Foxx can sing, but I don't know.
Oh, Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx.
That sounds Jamie like Fox. It. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Jamie now, can Fox. Viola sing, though, is the question. Can Viola sing?
Doesn't can matter. Meryl?
Put her in the movie.
I have to say, when I see Meryl Streep sing in a movie, I'm like, okay, fine. I mean, it's just not the thing I need from her. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ricky, yeah. Ricky and the Flash in the Pan.
Well, the Gene Shalit jumped out. Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Be serious, Sam. Anyway.
When we're back, my interview with the great Andrea Riseborough.
Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
Honestly, this person is so talented, I'm frightened by her, but she's been nothing but nice so far. So that's where I'm at with this interview. We are talking to a woman you've seen in Oblivion, Birdman, Bloodline, Nocturnal Animals, Battle of the Sexes, WE she was astounding in. Anyway, she has a new movie, To Leslie, out October 7th. We are delighted to welcome to Keep It, the enchanting and frankly downright gifted Andrea Riseborough. Thanks for being here.
God, that was absolutely lovely. Thanks.
You're like, okay now, whatever.
No, right. No. I'm like, come back anytime.
Okay, first of all, this movie, the actors you remind me of in this movie, I would have never associated with you before. Like, I kept thinking of like Holly Hunter. I thought of Anne Heche. I thought of Melissa Leo. Is it a burden to be this versatile? Because, and I don't mean to say that just to flatter you, like, you don't have a type. And so if I'm a casting director, I don't immediately think of you for these roles that you are extremely capable of playing because you are so across the board. It's strange.
I mean, I've always thought it would be very boring just to spend my life sort of exploring my own facets.
Yeah.
In my work. I mean, it's very interesting to do that outside of work, but, it's such a great gift when you are able to, you know, in a meaningful and changing way, step into a completely different walk of life. And it's such a rare oddity of a profession in that way that I always think, what a shame it would be not to make that journey. And believe me, sometimes I've tried in the sense that sometimes you do feel like playing close to yourself, and not that that's comfortable. That's also uncomfortable for a myriad of different reasons. Partly because you feel very exposed and seen, or at least I do. But the most rewarding, valuable engagements that I've had in work have always been where I've made the decision to travel toward the character rather than pull the character kicking and screaming back toward me. And I think that'd be pretty boring anyway. I mean, I'm not like the most boring person in the world, but also how many times you want to explore, you know, I think we all get a little bit sick of exploring, you know, one actor with all of their glorious facets that they have over and over and over again in different scenarios, rather than exploring different characters in different walks of life. And I think if you have the ability to be malleable, you know, if things like the change of your physical rhythm and accents are available to you, then it's really fascinating, because in a way it's almost like learning to speak a new language. You start to think and feel in a different way when you approach life from someone else's perspective.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, because again, your performance, I can't relate it to anything else you've done. And so my question is, in order to get into this character, who is a woman who at one point won the lottery but has squandered those winnings and is now in dire straits with her family, with life, is it terrible alcoholic? What has prepared you for this role, and how long did it take you to quote unquote get into character?
I think for every role, possibly that you play, your life prepares you for it in a sense, you know, because there's nothing that prepares you better for tackling somebody else's life than having experiences in your own. But there were lots of things that I think firstly what drew me to the piece was the fact that Michael, who I'd worked with on Bloodline, he was actually our showrunner on Bloodline. That's where we started our relationship. We've had quite a long working relationship now, and it's been so wonderful to work with Michael. He was the keeper of all knowledge on Bloodline. In a sense, it was almost like he, because, you know, as you know, in the US, a showrunner is very much a director, almost like at the helm of the theatre production or whatever, you know. He's really the only person who compasses every moving part of this very vast story that you're trying to catalogue in a series. So he and I became close in terms of wanting to do something again. He then brought this project to me, and Ryan, our writer, our screenwriter, who's a very brilliant screenwriter, finally wanted to tell the story of his own mother. And perhaps wanted to give her, I think, he's not said this to me, but I feel like perhaps he gave her the ending that she wasn't able to have in life through cinema. You know, sadly, she passed away not very long ago. And because the story was so personal and written by somebody in our industry, who was both in our industry already as an established, hugely competent writer, but was telling his own story, it felt special and personal. And Leslie felt like, you know, I had access to Leslie through those that outlived her. So I was able to talk to our writer about the vivacity of her and, you know, the abandon with which she approached life. And the character in so many ways felt so familiar to me. I'm from Newcastle in the northeast of England. It's a lot of fun. It's quite a cold place in terms of temperature, but it's a warm place in people's hearts. And there's a sort of reckless abandon, you know, that comes along with enjoying life there. It's a sort of party city, and that's the although in a sense I couldn't have stayed there personally, and that was less my interest, Leslie holds that in so many ways. She holds, she's such an extraordinarily fun person to be around, and but can also decimate really everybody in her path. So she's a, you simultaneously want to take care of her and to distance yourself from her. And she feels that, you know, she innately feels that rejection because she's very intuitive. Really, she only operates intuitively. She's a very intuitive character.
I mean, going back to Vivian Leigh and Gone with the Wind, there seems to be a trend of English women really understanding Southern characters, Southern U.S. characters. And I was wondering if you had any insight into why historically, you know, you people are so good at this.
It's a really, really unique and fascinating question. Perhaps it's colonialism, the class system, I mean, if you think about somebody like, you mentioned Gone with the Wind, so that puts us in the realm of Scarlett O'Hara. That's somebody in the upper echelons of Southern society. It's very, very different to this character, Leslie, who very much feels or is on the, because of her inability to function in the world, she's very much on the rubbish heap, really, in a sense. She has so far to look upward. And I think perhaps because of the very structured and restraining class system that still bubbles up now and then in the UK, the similarity between a working class underdog, perhaps in the north of England or the south, wherever, and the south of America.
Like, this character is not from the South, but even watching Kate Winslet in Mayor of Easttown, a part of me thought, and yet you're perfect for this role, even though I've not seen you do something like this, and you're certainly not from Pennsylvania. You know, the math of it still astounds me.
And Kate would, I mean, in my opinion, Kate would be really perfect in anything she chose to turn her hand to. And that's because she has an innate capacity to embrace a world in which she's hugely interested, you know, or to enter into a narrative or a story that compels her. Kate and I are about to do not the film that I'm shooting at the minute, but the film after that and the project after that. We're about to do two projects back to back together. So it's funny you should mention it. But I've really always admired that in Kate, that she really makes that journey with every tool that she has toward the character, should she choose to play it. So we're making a film. Really, my heart's in film and theatre, you know, still. I struggle a lot with anything episodic, which is why it was such a lovely thing after Bloodline to make To Leslie with Michael. And to get to have the freedom and the breadth that cinema affords you in terms of developing a character and staying with them for a substantial period of time, you know, rather than the main concern being plot or a plethora of other things. But know that I'm making a film with Kate. It's called Lee. And it's based on the life of Lee Miller. And in the film, I play Audrey Withers, who is the editor of Vogue in the Second World War, during the Second World War in London. She was actually editor of Vogue for 20 years, but she, throughout the Second World War, was the editor of Vogue. She was uniquely not particularly interested in fashion. She's quite an interesting character. She almost reminds me a little bit of Margaret Rutherford or something. She's a really unique character. But Kate and I are about to do that. And so Audrey was really one of the champions of Lee Miller. She was one of the people who enabled us to get a press pass through the American Corps rather than the English press corps, because you weren't, as a woman, allowed to take photos at the time. You know, it's one of the reasons that Lee Miller had took some of the first pictures inside of Dachau and the camps, you know, when they found out the horror that had been committed.
For people who don't know, Margaret Rutherford is who played Miss Marple in the Agatha Christie Mysteries of Yore. She's an Oscar winner, too. But that's a name that I feel like still has a lot of prominence in Britain. Do you have favorite old actors, old British actors that you like watching again and again?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I have favorite, you know, favorite mature actors, should we say, from all over the world, you know, really from all over the world, from... you know, Croatia, the Middle East. I mean, there are so many fantastic actors. I think that the really unusual thing about actors is they retain this childlike quality, because there's such a, and you probably identify with this in a sense, because I imagine a writer or a journalist has this sense of freedom or lack of stability being freelance. You know, I think if anyone's been freelance, they kind of understand what this means. But they retain a childlike quality even into their 80s and 90s when they're still working toward the end of their career, because they're still excited and seeking the next venture. And that's such a... It's actually something that takes a lot of humility to know that you've, you know, you work with actors at the RSC who've been in Hamlet 9 times, you know. And they're now 80 something, and you know they're in Hamlet again, and and quite jovially, you know, quite happily embracing the experience, and that takes a lot of humility to have that huge amount of experience, but to come every day to it afresh.
So it sounds like you remain a movie stalwart as a fan too, like you prefer the film experience to watching a TV experience.
I find it difficult to enjoy what they now call episodic content, which all sounds very soulless. I find it very difficult. That said, I've just produced something with Fremantle, which I hope in its nature, in its unusual nature, because it's being directed by some very brilliant auteur filmmakers, I hope will, I suppose what I'm trying to say is I'm trying as a producer and an actor and a writer to find my way through this episodic shift that we're having from cinema to episodic work. And I think there's vast potential. I'm not sure anybody is quite touching it. You know, I think the things that Kate are doing are really wonderful. It takes somebody very, very strong at the helm to, when you do something episodic, to push a character through that vast expanse of six to eight episodes, or 20 episodes in some cases, which is just mind-boggling. But actually, speaking to... older actors, and one who's not with us anymore, but somebody like Peter Falk, who had an incredible film career that people don't seem to really, I mean, cinephiles, those of us who love Cassavetes, of course, understand, see the entirety of his career, but people like Peter Falk, who ended up on television with the most incredible guest stars known to man on Columbo. you know, I mean, that's something to respect. It's not that, it's something to it's something to admire, because it requires both that wisdom and that eagerness to be curious about your job still.
It's interesting you bring up Cassavetes, because I feel like that name must loom large in the minds of serious actors, because it feels to me like when Jenna Rollins came around, there was just a seismic turn. Like there was the potential for what you could do on screen totally changed. Is that somebody whose work you've seen a lot of?
I think there were many shifts like that in cinema. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Gina Rollins. I don't think there are very few performers who occupy the sort of space that she does in terms of respect and how commanding she was as a screen presence. But I also think there have been so many shifts. Back to Vivien Leigh, a pointed shift is with Vivien Leigh and Marlon Brando. That's a very clear shift of one style of acting and another meeting in Glorious Union and what was a very successful piece of cinema in A Streetcar Named Desire, obviously. I know that you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. But
that's one of many, many shifts. And I think there are many actors like that. And there are many actors who it may not be perhaps recorded, but they have also put pennies in the coffer that development of naturalism on screen. And naturalism is extraordinary and fantastic and so much more of a reflection of real life, I think, you know, than the cinema language that we've come to expect. Or feel comfortable around. But also, I also love doing things that are, you know, that are completely surreal. I just made a film called Please Baby Please with a brilliant writer-director called Amanda Kramer. And it's lyrical. You know, it could have almost been written pentameter. It's not, but it's lyrical. It's camp. It's wild, it's sort of genderless, it's a really interesting LGBTQ plus type West Side Story without the songs. So it's also really exciting to do work like that.
I would almost expect you to do surreal stuff more often, because I would just expect you to be bored with like literal drama. You're just so capable of it that you would have to go into the world of the unnatural, unreal.
You know, I think it depends on the actor, but if you spend your time mentally in somewhere in a state that's quite surreal, then it kind of doesn't matter what gets put in front of you or how conventional it is. That's just going to pop out.
You know? Well, that's a psychological insight I'm thrilled to have. Wow. What's going on in your head that the surreal sort of just speaks to you?
No idea. I read a lot. I mean, I don't know. I'm a huge music fan. But my psychology is deeply boring. Let's not go into that. But Leslie's is complicated and so painful for those around her who love her.
This movie is great. Your performance is staggering. I'm thrilled to see another great performance added to your stack. I loved you in Death of Stalin. And by the way, you were simply fabulous as Wallace Simpson. I hope people talk to you about that performance still.
Oh, thank you. Actually, that was something that David O. Russell, who I've just made a film with, we had the premiere last night. That's something that he particularly liked. I think that's what... But one of the things earlier on that I did that he particularly liked, I think that's probably why I was able to work with him eventually. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here. And go see To Leslie, everybody. It's a wonderful film.
Oh, thank you so much for your insightful questions. That was lovely.
And To Leslie is in theaters October 7th.
Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.
Nicki Minaj is back in the news, and this time it's her fans who are making waves as they harass and threaten one of Nicki's critics, journalist Kimberly Foster. There's a lot of other things going on, too. Nicki's also suing a woman, a blogger who called her a cokehead.
But Nicki said, "I've never, ever done coke." And I was like, never, ever? Never, ever? Your whole life, Nicki? I don't.
Statistically, suspect. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Thank
right.
you.
Yeah. The funny thing about the blogger who called her a cokehead is that the blogger first said, and by the way, the blogger's name is Nosy Ho, spelled H-E-A-U-X. so, you know, you already know that she gets into people's business. You know,
right?
Mm-hmm. She's a nosy hoe, and she's probably going to talk about your nose where people do coke. You know, so
you're
many
like
layers,
a detective.
So many layers yeah. here. But she, when she first was saying it, she was like, "Allegedly, Nicki does cocaine. She's a cokehead." And then she's like, "I'm not even going to say allegedly. She does it." I was like, "Well, sis, come on." Yeah. Did Star Jones
she wanted
nothing?
The lawsuit. She
Did
wanted
Star
the lawsuit.
Did Star Jones on The View teach you nothing? Did Wendy Williams teach Listen, you nothing? You got to keep saying allegedly. What you say,
I
don't mean allegedly. You deserve the lawsuit.
I say allegedly when I'm talking to my dog. I say allegedly to everybody. Allegedly everything. Cover your ass. What's weird to me, though, is apparently Nicki sued this woman for only $75,000. That's all?
What? Well, is that even a lawsuit? That's like game show winnings.
I remember blogging. I remember blogging, and $75,000 was a lot of money at the time. You know,
but I'm just saying that's like the level that Judge Judy handles. It's just not that significant.
That's like I know that's, but that's like three times as much as I used to make at BuzzFeed.
Right. Oh wow, they were paying you. They were paying you in coupons. What was going on there?
They paid me in Chiquita bananas. Okay. speaking of a legend, by the way, though, I want to point out that someone called me out on Instagram for last week's episode saying, "Ira, I love how you referred to Anne Boleyn's alleged scandals."
Yeah, we don't want her after us. If Anna the Thousand Days has taught me anything, you don't want her on your trail. The allegedly thing is interesting. At Kimmel, routinely, Don Trump Jr. comes up, and you want to say the same thing about him. Then you realize, oh, no, it's different than making a joke in another way. Like, using those kinds of words, like cokehead, like, is treacherous.
Yeah. I found it really interesting when I did try to read up on this, and it's so many layers to it. The lawyer's comments and filings are just as aggressive and petty and antagonistic as like the barbs on Twitter. Her lawyer's crazy too. Like the lawyer is like picking a fight in these legal documents. I don't understand what's gotten over her and her team. She's just mad at the world. And I'm like, Nicki, why are you mad? Queen Radio is paying you a lot of money. You got a ton of hits. I'm sure you're still rich. What's up? Like, what's going on?
Is Queen Radio paying her a lot of money? Because Azealia Banks has famously said podcasts are the brokest form of media.
I just don't get why she's so angry.
I really don't get it. And I think this goes to... So the original thing is... Kimberly Foster is being is suing Barb's for doxing her. She, you know, tweeted a defense of Lil Kim's influence on Nicki. And then she also tweeted, Nicki is so clearly a horrible person. Negativity sticks to her like glue. I don't know if we've ever seen this before. And, you know, I say this as a person who has been a huge Nicki Minaj fan, you know. I've had to fall off in recent years just because, like, the internet presence is so toxic. And it's not just her. It's truly the fan base. And it's a feeding of one another. And I don't think I've seen this before either.
Well, what I haven't seen is how she kind of feeds it. She'll like some of these really mean trolls' tweets when they're going after folks that she hates. And then she'll kind of subtly tell them. She follows them. And then she'll subtly tell them, all right, go ahead. Go off, go get them. Like she kind of like calls the dogs in. It's very dangerous, you know, to see Kimberly Foster share some of those screen grabs of the messages she was getting. Folks were saying, I don't care if you live in a secure department, we're going to come find you and like kill you. Literally, they were saying this all because she said once, I don't like Nicki. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And like behind all of this, there's also the whole thing that like apparently Nicki is an anti-vaxxer on top of all this mess. It's crazy.
Oh, yes. Well, she does have some strange theories about that regarding friends of friends of friends or whatever that was. That, by the way, I feel like went by the wayside in a way that I did not expect. I thought we would still be making jokes about that like years and years.
I'm still making jokes about that.
Okay, good. Thank you for keeping it up. No, but something that's interesting to me is I get fed up when people say things like, oh, this person has so much money or they're so successful. Why are they even spending time on Twitter? It's like, well, you want to know what people are up to. Like, you're still a sociable human being. Like, I feel like you can't blame people for wanting to be involved in a conversation. That said, Nicki Minaj in particular, I just feel like life would be better if the internet never happened to her. Every story, she's never done one rad thing on the internet.
Yeah. Well, and it's like once you reach a certain level of fame, you're really not supposed to tweet. Like, that's kind of the secret rule. You're that big now, don't tweet. Beyonce ain't tweeting. Taylor Swift ain't tweeting. And the fact that, like, Nicki Minaj isn't just on Twitter every day, but also has Queen Radio where she just pops off about whatever for hours a day, that is a recipe for disaster for someone as famous as she is. When you're that big, speak less, not more.
Yeah, and it's also the following of the fans, too, because, you know, it's like, you have to feed into the, like, always saying something positive about her because she's following you. You know, she could be monitoring what you're saying. And it's, I just don't understand the impetus. And then it's not just Barb's, too, from a lot of stands. Like, the impetus to, you're attacking someone in the name of this person. There's just a lot of cruelty and nastiness that comes with a lot of internet fandoms at this point. And it's troubling because it's, you know, the stuff that was written to Kimberly is vile and scary. Oh, yeah. But also, like, and journalists shouldn't have to go through this shit, you know? Like, we're joking, too, about, like, being doxxed or whatever by even just discussing this, especially knowing this is going to end up on the Keep of Snapchat.
right.
And people will be looking. But, you know, it's also like you shouldn't have to be like, I'm afraid of being doxxed. You shouldn't have to say, I'm not scared of these people, because you're like, you shouldn't have to worry about being killed by doing your job and reporting on a pop star. You know, it's truly ridiculous. But also, not just the scariness on the Kimberly part, I'm like, are none of these people who are online tweeting about people afraid that, like, one time in Nicki's name, you're going to say something about somebody and try and pull up and do something to them, and like, and then they might get killed or someone might go after them. I'm like, because at a certain point, you're not going to keep talking about me on the internet crazy. You could be found too.
Yeah. What I don't like in general with just like this very performative type of toxic fandom and stand-up that has been ascendant the last several years is that like it convinces people to care the most about the people who need the least care.
Right.
The people that you're toxic standing, they're so rich and powerful and wealthy. They're set for life. They don't need you to defend them. Nicki Minaj needs no one to defend her, right? And yet you convince yourself that if you're not out there tweeting on her behalf, she suffers. It's so wild to me. Like, put that energy towards anything else. Whoever you're toxic fanning and standing, they actually don't need it. They're fine.
Well, also just the primary problem with Twitter in general is we have accidentally gotten a lot of information from there, like that we use in our daily lives. And sometimes it's from, you know, verified news sources. But in general, I think people just forget to ask, who am I actually listening to right now? Mm-hmm. Who is this person? Where are they coming from? Where is their information from? And I feel like stans are like the heart of the worst of the matter.
Yeah.
You know.
Do we like the new song? Because I secretly like the new song.
Oh, Super Freaky Girl.
It's grown on me a little bit.
It works.
I hated it until I heard it in the club, and now I like it. And now I can't stop playing it. So it is.
Yeah.
It's good. It did its job, you know?
I'm not going to say it's bad because I don't want the fans after me.
Listen, is it a classic? Are children going to be singing this song at graduations, weddings, at funerals? Probably not.
That fucking meme. Imagine singing at a graduation. It's so funny.
We used to do that, though.
Oh, yeah.
I did
we
not.
Would pick our senior year song. Our song senior year of high school, and it was Boys to Men, End of the Road. And I was like, it's 2002. Why are we doing this?
Middle school, we sang I Believe I Can Fly.
That didn't age well.
No, my middle school graduation song was, of course, that Vitamin C song. It wasn't yours, Ira?
But the actually singing. Well, probably not middle school. I think grade school, actually. I'm like de-aging myself or something. It's like fourth or fifth grade. But we definitely were singing. School's children were singing I Believe I Can Fly at graduations, weddings, and funerals. Okay? That is the mark of a good song.
It's true.
Not of a good human, though.
The horrible standing on Twitter, it is always, I don't want to say funny because that gives these people a power that they don't deserve. But like when someone is violently mean on behalf of Lady Gaga, the person who innovated the term kindness punk, like what planet are you on? Like even with Nicki Minaj, at least a part of her style is cutting in lyrics. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I can intuitively connect the two a little bit. Not with anybody else.
Yeah. Also, go outside. I can get some of this energy during lockdown and pandemic. We're approaching full free now. Go touch grass. Go walk a dog. Go do something.
Take the shackles off your feet and dance, okay?
You know an old phrase that should be brought back? Go fly a kite.
Love there you that. Go. Yes. Yes.
Picture bringing a kite outside.
Come on, Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Charlie Brown, et cetera. Yeah.
I also, this is a brief aside, and this isn't to say that this is toxic culture, but I want to talk about the celebrities and people tweeting in general. And we brought up Rina Sawayama's album before it was coming out, and now it is officially out, and I don't love it. It's not hitting like the first album hit, but her Twitter presence lately has been
what is she troubling. Doing? What's she doing?
I'm going to read how she like tweets now, and it's feeding into like the way stans tweet. And I just feel like it does make me feel great about the music. Yeah. But I want to get your thoughts.
Okay.
Hold the girl, track 8, imagining. Are you gay satisfied yet? I don't know what genre this is, in parentheses, mother music. We have already choreographed this and it goes off live, but wow, I'm not quite fit enough yet, and so might need a puff of mother mist.
What is that?
There's a certain point where stans are like doing these insane jokey tweets, like everything is slay and everything is like mother, this
mother,
and that.
Yeah.
And now to see like an actual like pop star who was so innovative and original and fresh and like sounded so smart on this show too, talking about her music and art, tweeting like a gay with 23K followers on Twitter is troubling.
Here's the thing. Don't talk like that unless you can duck walk. Unless you can really serve. If you can't back it up, no. I just feel like, that's tiresome.
It feels like everything is slay now. And it's,
everything is slay.
And it's funny because this goes into the conversation of like, are we okay with our pop stars being corny? Because people used to accuse Lizzo of this. And I think people just thought Lizzo was corny because she was a
fat black woman. That's just actually how she is.
She is, but she was also just a fat black woman who was like, you know, talking about self-love and loving herself. And I felt like a lot of white people picked up that positivity and made it corny themselves. Like, you know, yes. White people singing Good as Hell is corny, but the act of Lizzo doing it isn't corny. What was actually corny was being at Coachella and with, like, Don't Say Gay was happening, having Rena have the audience chant with her, "When I say, you say gay." I'm like, no. We're not doing that.
Christina Aguilera did that at Pride too. Yeah,
Christina Aguilera did that too, and it's like, wow.
Also, just like, leave us wanting more. Some of these girlies, it's just like, leave me wanting more. Don't leave me wanting less of you. I don't know. I just feel like with Nikki, with Rena, like you're talking about now, like a lot of this would be helped if they just like put the phone down and to stop talking for a bit and let the work do the work. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Well, I think part of the problem is, you're right, like, Ira, what she's doing is internalizing vernacular that's being thrown at her on Twitter all the time and speaking in that, and which just feels contrived. It just feels like you're molding the conversation to a select group of people as opposed to just talking the way you would normally talk.
That's how Carly Rae Jepsen. Not in her language, but she was long a person who was championed by gay fans as being, you know, like, sort of like, she felt like, ours an undergrad, and we were like, why don't straight people know her beyond Call Me Maybe, you know? And then she had that awful song Beach House come out, and the video was like gay TikTokers doing dances on the beach with her. And I'm like, where did you even get this? You know,
Stay Canadian and pure, please. Yes.
Thankfully, the new song is very good.
I love the new song, Talking to Yourself. Great song. Yes.
That's her. It felt like a one-off, though, like a this is what the gays are doing. This is where the culture is. Like, when you're trying to chase the culture, it always seems a bit, you're not innovative anymore, you know?
The music feels ephemeral, because I feel like with Lizzo's latest album, she's trying to be, with every song, viral on TikTok, viral here. She wants to be like, this is a song for the bachelorette party. This is a song for the girl's birthday night. This is a song for TikTok and Twitter. And it's like, it's not going to last because it feels so ephemeral.
I like the album, but it does make me want to, you know, hit a Soul Cycle class.
Yeah, I actually still do it, like About Damn Time. I think I like the Nile Rodgers vibe.
That one's catchy. That one grew me. But I think in general, her vibe right now is very girl boss kids bop.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it works for me, but some of it is just like, I don't think it's
one of the best songs on her album. Is Naked is like a sexy song about.
I want more of that.
Yeah, that sexy song. It feels Janelle Monáe. It feels, you know, sort of autobiographical too. You know, it's about her body, like. I want music like that from her. I thought that was sexy. I thought it was smart. I thought it was brilliant. I think it's the best song she's ever written.
Yes.
So you were saying something, Lewis? Anyway, you want to jump out too?
No, I just in general, though, it does feel to me like meme world and, you know, what you were talking about, like words that pick up like on gay Twitter, for example, and how we like exchange them 100,000 times has really given people permission to be cliche in a way that I think was not in vogue even like 10 years ago and stuff. And it's like, guys, you have to understand being cliche is boring. Like, truly, no one wants to hear it, even though it feels correct coming out of your mouth because other people are using the same words. Like, just be honest. Like, be actually articulate.
Be who you are.
And, yes, right. I'm like, that is what I want to hear. That's what people want to hear. So
be yourself.
That's the message of Keep It, as you know.
And go fly a kite.
Be yourself and stop tweeting.
Yes. The cliche that fits the mold. Yes.
All right. Well, we're back. Our favorite segment of the episode, as usual, it's Keep It. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. Sam, you've listened to us for years. Like, what's been boiling in your soul? Like, what's your Keep It?
Yeah, I feel bad because like my Keep It this week is not a fiery one. It's more of a question than an exclamation point. And the question is, Mark Wahlberg, what are you doing? This week, it felt like that man put out a new Netflix movie every day. Like, there's a lot of Netflix movies from him. I also keep getting ads on Twitter for his Catholic prayer app where you can, like, pray with Mark Wahlberg. Y'all seen this?
I have seen that.
More like pray you can get away from Mark Wahlberg at
thank
a bar.
You. But then here's what's crazy. After that, I was like, what's up with this dude? Why is he working so hard? Does he owe somebody money? I was like, what is his career like right now? He also owns a series of car dealerships, a big used Chevy car dealership in Columbus, Ohio, that's on top of having the Wahlberger burger chain. My keep it is Mark Wahlberg's career. Why are you doing all of these things? It's weird. I don't like it. Something's off. Do you have gambling debt? What is it? Keep it. Stop with the movies. Stop with the restaurants. Stop with the business ventures. I will not pray with you. Like, I've had enough of this man, even though I don't even watch what he does anymore. What is it about him? What is it?
Well, he's white and from Boston. I feel like they have a hustle mentality.
When they're not hate crimeing people of color.
Oops, you will stay on his neck about that.
I mean, it happened. Did it happen? It did.
You can't just do a little hate crime in your youth.
Not really. Not as a treat.
Every once in a while, you do just have like dark suspicions about like a celebrity's career. Again, I think I brought this up sometime last year, but for a little while, John Malkovich was taking like the eighth lead in movies that were not worth his time. You know, John Malkovich,
like,
one of the most definitive theater actors of the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And I'm like, why are you in Bird Box? Why are you in this movie Ava with Jessica Chastain? And it makes me think something is not right or there's blackmail involved.
Yes. Well, I've heard that Nicolas Cage,
actually,
for a while when he was in all those movies, he was actually just in debt.
Well, the Malkovich one I know, Lewis.
Well, he was in debt. He lost all his money.
No. From Madoff.
How'd he lose his money?
John Malkovich.
He's a Madoff person, right?
Yeah, John Malkovich was a Madoff person, and so that's why he was working so much. Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to say, you would think he would have worked more at the time when he lost all that money and not, you know, 10 years after.
Yeah, well, some of those movies that he did, you know, were probably filmed 10 years prior. And then finally got released.
That's right. Yeah.
I used to do that for a while, though, like Google a celebrity's name and Bernie Madoff to find out, is this why they're making the choices they're making?
Right. And sometimes it works out. Then you get Kira Sedgwick in The Closer, you know?
Yeah.
Have y'all watched these movies that Mark Wahlberg is in on Netflix? In one of them, plays Kevin Hart's best friend and they have a birthday party together. And in the other one, he's like a Catholic priest.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Kevin Hart, Mark Wahlberg movie, as much as that sounds like a great double feature, probably not. And, you know, the only actors I want to see pretending to be priests in a comedy are Ed Norton and Ben Stiller, okay?
I like that.
Yeah.
Keep it up the faith, great movie. Lewis, what's your keep it?
Okay, well, I'm doing something very controversial. I'm innovating something. I know Ira and I, we used to have a segment called Keep It Up, where we would encourage someone to keep doing something, but Keep It Up felt a little cheesy. So I am now innovating something else. Inspired by the song That's What Friends Are For by Gladys and Friends, I'm calling this segment Keep Shining. And Keep Shining goes to Cardi B. Who's done Twitter well over the years. Somebody, I'm not even going to say the person's name because I don't know who this is. It's just a person. Tweeted 4 pictures and said, celebrities that came out as bisexual but never dated someone of the same gender. Well, Cardi saw that. And she responded, I ate bitches out before you was born. Sorry I don't have razor phone pics to prove it to you.
A queen.
Clear.
Queen. Also, I live for any and all razor phone references because the kids don't know. The kids don't know what that era felt like.
So the razor flip was like,
the sound of the close of the phone. Oh,
so satisfying. You would have a phone and it was like a Chinese finger trap. It would be like flip, flip, flip. Yeah, you know.
Also, shout out to her delivering this week also some very good looking courtroom photos. It's been a while since like Naomi Campbell or something where you've had like a celebrity like walking into court with giving a fashion show. So
we love her.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, like a shout out to like movies of yore where like the femme fatale would walk into court and have simply just a giant brooch. Like you had a testifying brooch that you wore.
I also, you know, it's funny to think about our chat about Nicki. Cardi tweets as much as Nicki does, but Cardi's not getting in that kind of trouble. she's done something where like her Twitter persona is lovable.
Well, she's funny. So
that is an interesting thing, though, because Nikki is very funny.
She's funny, but Cardi
is determined to keep the funny light.
Yeah,
exactly.
Cardi punches up. She doesn't punch down usually, you know?
Yes.
Right.
And Nikki just punches everybody.
Yes, absolutely. She's a rock'em sock'em robot. My keep it this week goes to the. So first of all, Adam Levine is a hoe. As we've all found out.
But a very pretty hoe. A very, very
pretty
hoe.
He is a pretty hoe. He is a pretty
hoe. Facial symmetry.
Yes.
He cheated on his Victoria's Secret model wife, whose name I unfortunately never know. Shout out to her. But he cheated on her with some girl. And it came out. And then we also found out that he wanted to name his child, that his third child he is having with his Victoria's Secret model wife, after Summer, the woman that he cheated with. Wild behavior that men, that celebrities are just like full on having DMs still with women on Instagram with like the verified sticker next to them. It's like people
haven't we learned the Instagram DMs will get you. We know this by now.
They always get
we
you.
We know Maybe this.
Twitter circles are getting people now too. People are screenshotting the Twitter circles and showing people
and
that you're shit talking them.
Yes, right.
But my keep it once again goes to how we should have kept this story on Adam being a hoe. But once again, the internet needed to bring out their vitriol toward Maroon 5. And
you are a stan. This is legitimate.
I do not get why people are so aggressively angry at Maroon 5 songs. Okay, they are.
I'll tell you why.
Like
I'll tell you
like
why.
They're like the Cars, okay?
No.
Like,
everyone
liked the Cars back then.
No, sir. Don't you do
that's,
that, slander.
I'm sorry. That's true because there are many Maroon 5 songs better than Just What I Needed.
here's everyone's problem with Maroon 5. You go back to that first album, Songs About Jade.
Songs About Jade.
It was really, really good. It was a bait and switch. You were used to a certain kind of sound, and then it totally went to something like Urgent Care, Waiting Room, Rock Pop. And sometimes it's really good, but it's not what Songs About Jane promised me. And
that's
I'm still
fair.
Mad about that. I'm mad
that's
about
it. Actually, can I say something? That is actually how I feel about Get Ready, Black Eyed Peas.
Because I was about to say
they were
Black
good
Eyed
at first.
Peas.
They were good at first.
They had that album with like Macy Gray on it.
It was like neo soul rap for a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you kind of thought that's what you were going to get. And then it turned into like, what? It's this, you know, consortium of TJ Maxx,
Stadium
Target,
Pop.
And Urgent Care. And they all got together and made music that sounds like somebody threw a calculator down the stairs.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, don't switch it up on us.
Yeah.
Be who you're going to be from the start.
I will agree that they sold out. But, you know, I feel like some of the songs do hit to me.
What's the one that's like a sample of like Pachelbel's Canon? Which's the one? memories. What's that?
Oh,
one?
Right. Yes. Yeah. The one with Ellen in the video. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
Girls
that.
Like You.
It's a good song. Not Girls Like You.
Oh, that's the one with Cardi. Listen,
memories,
I also
the memories don't let go.
My love of Maroon 5 also ignores the last two albums, but I go all the way up to Payphone. Okay. Payphone and One More
Payphone.
Night. Okay.
One More Night's good.
Overexposed. Good album.
Not
the Maroon 5 we were promised, but, you know, it's like you meet a friend and they're cool, you know, whatever. And then, like, a few years later, you see them, like, they're different. They've gone through a divorce or maybe they make a lot more money. They're, like, they're still the same person, but they got a different sort of, like, personality, you know? It's, it's like a recast on a soap opera, okay?
Oh, Lord.
Like,
oh,
only
Lord.
Some of the listeners will get this, but it's like, Patrick Muldoon on Days of Our Lives into Austin Peay. They're both Austin Reed, but they're two different people.
Okay.
Okay,
I will
very
say
good.
On that note, there is an obscure, not widely known Kanye West remix of This Love. It's really good. Go find it, listeners. You'll like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also, unfortunately, do to this day love Moves Like Jagger, which I mean is for if ever there was a
here's
back
my
to
question,
school
though.
Kids commercial music. It's that.
Why would
but I
anyone
love
want to move like Jagger? He could not dance.
Oh, don't start with that.
He
Come
was
on.
Seizing. He was seizing.
Okay, well, that's what white people can do. Accept it.
Yeah, that's what white... And on a side note, the white people are moving like Jagger in every TikTok video that they've released with,
no kidding.
With Renaissance. And I'm like, I need white people to like put down the album and stop dancing
yes,
to
I
it.
Agree.
Or if
I
you're going to dance, do dance like no one is watching and make sure no one's watching. Because people keep putting their viral videos, people keep putting up
much.
Their choreography videos. And I'm like, some of these aren't hitting the way you're thinking they're hitting. You're not eating. No. You look starved. Anyway, that's all the Keep It we have this week. Shout out to Andrea Riseborough. May she continue to rise.
In all of the boroughs, yes.
Mostly the Bronx, okay?
That's
great food. Underrated food, okay? Yeah. South Bronx.
We love the Bronx. Shout out to Co-op City, yes.
And shout out to Sam Sanders for taking time out of his busy,
what a pleasure.
Busy multiple podcast schedule to be here with us.
So good to be here with y'all. Listeners are going to say again, you can find me on Vibe Check on Wednesdays and Intuit from Vulture on Thursdays. And also while I'm here, my entire team said make sure to ask them to come on Intuit at some point soon. This is a formal invite. You both are invited.
Oh, all right.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to bring it. So,
yeah.
Yes. Well, we look forward to it.
I thought I was blacklisted from Vulture, but, you know, I will come back.
Not on my watch. Not on my watch.
Where is Ianla?
Don't ask that question. You don't want to know.
Wow. That should be the beginning of a horror movie. Yeah.
And don't forget to check out full episodes of Keep It on the Uncultured YouTube channel. And while you're at it, rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. Remember, Keep It 5-star reviews are the only way we can continue to do our work, like getting people like Adnan Syed out of prison. Okay? You gotta do it.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fertel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nar Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for our production support every week.
Hey, Crooked listeners, if you haven't become a friend of the pod yet, you are missing out on exclusive bonus content that drops every single week. If you do join, you're helping us, grow Crooked Media, which is one of the few independent, proudly pro-democracy media companies left in Trump's America. If you join, you also get ad-free episodes of all your favorite pods, ad-free episodes of Pod Save America, Love It or Leave It, Offline, Pod Save the World. You also get bonus content like our new extra episode of Pod Save America called Pod Save America Only Friends, Dan Pfeiffer's Polar Coaster. You also get access to all of our excellent Substack newsletters like Pod Save America Open Tabs and tons more great content. So stop what you're doing right now and go ahead and subscribe at crooked.com/friends. Check it out.